Hello and welcome to Blogosphere Serious Influence, the podcast all about the business side of the influencer industry. I'm Alice Audley and I'm the founder of Blogosphere, which hopefully you've heard of. But if not, Blogosphere is a media company rooted in the world of influencers. We run events, an influencer network, and publish a nationally distributed print magazine, and now a podcast too, which I'll be presenting. If there are any questions about the influencer industry that you want answered, be sure to tweet us your suggestions. Our Twitter handle is @BlogosphereM. And if you want to learn more about influencers and the influencer industry, be sure to visit blogosphere magazine.com and invest in a subscription to our essential magazine. I'm delighted to announce that this series of Serious Influence is being exclusively sponsored by our very own tech platform, the Blogosphere Network. The Blogosphere Network is a platform where brands and influencers can feedback on what it was actually like to work with each other on campaigns. Real, qualitative data. If you'd like a demo of the service, please drop us an email at info@blogosphere.biz. That's info@blogosphere.biz. It's time to bring back the human touch to this human industry. Today on Blogosphere Serious Influence, I'm joined by Dom Smales. Dom is the founder of Gleam Futures, a digital-first talent management company. Dom founded Gleam in 2010 and has witnessed the industry explode firsthand. Gleam's talent include Zoe Sugg, Jim Chapman, In The Fro, Katie Snooks, and most recently, Mrs. Hinch.
I am Dom Smales. I am the CEO and founder of Gleam Futures, and we are a digital-first talent management company based in the UK with offices in Sydney and also Los Angeles.
Tell me a bit more about your background. How did you kind of get into the world of social media? What were you doing before? Or even let's go all the way back to what you were like at school and university. Did you always know you wanted to be a CEO?
No, never. In fact, I didn't know what I wanted to do for a living. And in a way, still don't, and fell into this purely by just trying to do things that I was interested in. But my reports at school talked a lot about the fact that I couldn't concentrate on anything for very long. And the only things that I could concentrate on were things that were positioned to me as if they were a game. And I got into this whole business through going through a career path of media, marketing, working for huge media owners, Daily Mail and General Trust, Chrysalis Radio, that is now Global Radio, and eventually ending up at a production company.
What were your roles at Global? What were you doing?
I was on the commercial side of things, marrying up digital solutions with brands through the media owner platforms, basically. So I was a group head at Chrysalis Radio. I ended up being the managing director of the production company that I left just before I started Gleam. And I sold newspaper ads at Daily Mail and General Trust and in their local title. So Northcliffe Newspapers, which is like the Leicester Mercury and the
So you pretty much
Daily
had an
Mail
overview of everything.
Like kind of, from that aspect, yeah. It was USP Content, which is the production company that I worked for before I started Gleam. And we had a couple of agents there that managed the careers of presenters, sports presenters mainly, and TV presenters, radio presenters. And that was my first taste of talent as such. And it's a bit of a cheesy story, but I had a really big health episode at that point in my life. This was 10 years ago now. But it was life-threatening. I'm fine now, in a way. And it made me just take stock of my life. I had two small kids. I had two babies almost. And I wanted to spend more time with them. And I wanted to only spend my time doing something that I was really into and passionate about.
So you're off work for...
I was off work for a while, yeah. I was about, I think, 3 or 4 months out of the business. And I was so ill that it made me feel very mortal. And it made me think deeply about how I want to spend the rest of my life. Should I get there? All of that kind of stuff. And I was into social media. I thought it was fascinating. And I was obsessed by YouTube and what YouTube was doing and the people that were creating content on YouTube and the audiences that they were building on YouTube. And I spotted Sam and Nick Chapman, Pixie Woo, making videos about makeup, teaching people how to do makeup on their channel. And I noticed how fast they were growing and how much engagement they were getting and the conversations they were having with their audience and how far outweighing that was compared to the viral videos and the Ferraris crashing and the dogs on skateboards and things like that.
Actually building direct relationships.
Yeah, it's a very different type of content.
Was YouTube the first social media platform that you got really into then, or were you sort of a member of Facebook before or Twitter? What was the first platform that you joined?
So yes, YouTube was the first platform I really got into, I guess. Instagram didn't exist at this point,
yeah.
Obviously. I was on Facebook and enjoyed kind of like connecting with old friends on Facebook. And I noticed at that time, this is 2010, that a lot of the young people in the office were spending more and more time on Facebook. But it was the...
How do you monitor that in your office, obviously, as a social media business, that you're supposed to be researching what's on social media, but what's the balance between work and play?
There's no line. It's all work and play. So the young people I was referring to just then were the young people in this production company in 2010 were spending more time on Facebook. And we tried to cut it down because it was nothing to do with work at that point, you know. There wasn't a business there. We were in the business of putting people on the radio and making radio and TV programs. But now everybody's on social media all the time in our offices and are encouraged to do so. I think one of the big differences between Gleam Futures and other companies in the space is that all we do is digital first talent, social media influencers, whatever you want to call them. That's all we do and all we've ever done. And everybody that works there is into that. They're not PR people that also do a bit of social media. They're not advertising people that think influencers are interesting as an advertising outlet. All the people that work at our place, from accounts all the way through to talent managers, brand partnerships managers, etc., are into the platforms, the talent, and the content that everybody creates on our roster.
I definitely want to touch on that moving forward. But going back, you've spotted Sam and Nick, see the engagement that they have with their audiences. Do you have a relationship with them, or do you just reach out to them? And this is the beginning of your idea for Gleam.
Yeah, so I didn't know them. I only knew them as the people that were teaching me how to do a smoky eye on YouTube. And I dropped them an email through the YouTube email system. You were able to message people through YouTube. And I did that. And this wouldn't happen these days, but they saw it and responded to me because I was the first person to have reached out to them about anything other than wanting a makeup tip. And Sam came and met me in London, and she was in London anyway. And we just got on, basically. I was fascinated by what they were doing. Have you met Sam and Nick?
At the awards, yes.
Yeah, they're hugely charismatic people and laid back, as well as absolutely laser focused and dedicated. And we got on, Sam introduced me to Nick. We talked about the potential of what they were doing. Remember, I hadn't managed talent like hands-on before, but I had an understanding of the value of what they were doing and media and the potential, and I twigged that this is only going one way. And that was the beginning of the germ that created Gleam Futures now. I was in the process of setting up anyway. I'd just set up a brand consultancy on social media and was evangelizing about the power of social media for brands and how brands should connect with online communities, but in a meaningful partnerial way for mutual benefit rather than treating it as an advertising outlet.
So when Gleam started, it wasn't purely talent management, the business?
No one was earning a living from specifically talent on the platforms and wouldn't do until 2013, 2014, really. So it was an investment in time and effort. Sam and Nick introduced me to Tanya and Jim and Ruth Crilly, and they're kind of like the OG group of people that were creating. Yeah, the Norfolk Massive, creating content on the platform. And then through them, I met Zoe and Alfie and Marcus and so on and so forth, and Joe. But nobody was earning a living from it. I was massively interested in it and was trying to give advice and support and guidance from a commercial point of view on how best to protect their rights and carve a space out to be able to earn a living. But
what were the commercial conversations back then when brands first started getting in touch? Did they just see it as purely a PR opportunity and there was lots of education? And how much do you still need to educate?
More now than ever, I guess. kind of like 10 years on, because it's such a bigger part of the whole paradigm. And because more and more people across marketing departments across the world are beginning to think about it, there's a bigger appetite for knowledge that is not met by the depth of experience in the marketplace. There's very little experience in the marketplace because we've been doing it the longest and didn't have any competition until maybe 3 or 4 years ago, really. And maybe 80% of the competition now started 2 years ago or 1 year ago. So there's a real lack of knowledge and expertise. And it's putting that knowledge and expertise on making it available to people that are running these campaigns that I think is going to be the future of preserving the validity of this whole space.
I completely agree. I think that we see so much coverage in mainstream press talking about the negatives of social media influencers and the impact that they're having. But actually what we need to look at, and what's probably more concerning, is the industry side. And that we have had so many people join the market in a short amount of time, all saying that they're experts. And actually, I don't feel that on the industry side, we're moving forward as much as we could do, and that maybe there needs to be more communication between industry members. And I think that people have heard the buzzword influencer, think that that's where they can just go in and get lots of money, and actually trying to monetize it at every single level possible to the detriment of the validity of the industry. I mean, that's a bit of a rant, but what would you
think? I know what you mean. It's about preserving credibility as well, because we run the risk now of it becoming toxic because of the amount of noise in the marketplace. And I think you're absolutely right. I think the quality has to be heard more often and at a greater volume. And if that means like we should galvanize the industry together, then I think that's a great thing, because we have not seen the best yet out of what will happen. We're still, like, the world is finding its feet with it. And like any form of entertainment or media, it's about quality to create longevity. And the big difference between this medium and entertainment platforms that have preceded it is that there are no gatekeepers now. So the editors, the studio bosses, the commissioners are finding they're becoming less consulted with, and people are finding a voice, which is a really amazing, positive and powerful thing. And I love that about the whole industry, that anybody can find a platform to talk to an audience. But it needs also, if there are commercial terms involved, it needs taking responsibility for. I think we want as much clarity when it comes to compliance as possible. And the audience want as much clarity when it comes to compliance as possible. And everybody's racing to get to that balanced point where everybody understands how it works and what's happening and what's an ad and what's not an ad and all that kind of stuff. It's the hard yards at the moment, trying to, you know, find that clear perspective.
Do you think that one of the problems is that brands and some media agencies think that they can make influencer marketing a straight media buy and want to be able to scale it and just, you know, plug in a brief and then it gets done, and people are removing the fact that, going back to you watching Sam and Nick, that you saw the relationship with their audience and that interaction. And so at scale, people just want to make it work in the same way that you would buy an ad on Piccadilly. And that's just not what this industry is.
Yeah. Well, I think there lies the problem in that the phrase influencer marketing, and I use those bunny, if you could see me, I'm doing those bunny ears too often when mentioning the word influencer marketing. It is just so broad and all encompassing that we're missing, like, how bits of influencer marketing differ from others. So the straight media buy that you've just described has a really valid place in the entire mix, but it's very different to the magic that happens when a talent partners with a brand completely credibly and passionately because they genuinely love that brand or product and have done for a long time, and they go into partnership together to create some really unique content together that benefits their audience from either, you know, an entertainment perspective, knowledge perspective, or whatever else. That piece of magic is not something that you can commoditize. But if you want to bring that magic to audiences at scale and try and find people that didn't realize that they would benefit from that piece of entertainment content or knowledge, then that's where media can play a really interesting role to broadcast it, to scale the audience, basically. But you can't mush it all together and then buy it as a commodity without even meeting the talent, talking to the like having a relationship there, because it's not broadcast media. Like, doesn't mean broadcast media is not a valid thing or is dead or all that kind of stuff. Absolutely not. It will always have its place. And, you know, more people are watching TV now than ever, all of those kind of things. Absolutely. But let's try and preserve the really unique thing that happened in 2010, 2011, when people started making content on social media platforms for audiences and they've grown. Let's preserve that, because that's the unique thing that will never change.
In terms of audiences' reception to branded content and brand collaborations, from my point of view, you see the most positivity with a collaboration, for instance, like Zoe and Colourpop, when they come together and create something together, and then you've got Sophie Does Nails with Makeup Revolution. And, do you think that we're going to see more of that? I suppose by that point, by default, the influencer is using their creativity to be involved in it. So it goes back to that. Do you think we'll see more of that?
Yeah, more of that, but hopefully less of that, if you see what I mean. If 10,000 people did makeup, then it would kind of, a lot of it wouldn't work and it would kind of sully the magic of what happens there. So I think, again, it's about quality over quantity. Once you find the perfect collaboration, like Sophie Does Nails and Zoe's collaboration with Colourpop, like Sam and Nick with Real Techniques, and that is like the essence of all of this, is that it's got to be valid and real. And you see it succeed hugely.
What are your views on influencer marketplaces? Do you think that we'll see some consolidation there, sort of the platforms?
Describe influencer marketplaces.
So a Takumi, a Tribe, a Bazaar, where you put in the briefs and they come out the other end. I think that quite a few of the platforms are developing a higher tier of influencers where they do direct relationships as well, in terms of the straight apps. And do you think that they have been good for the industry?
Yeah, I think if, again, we focus on the true meaning of talent, and I'm not saying that someone that has 1,000 followers and the content that they create is any more or less valid than someone that has 100 million followers and the content that they create, but it's about the content that those people make and how credible that is. I think influencer marketplaces have a role to play in this whole influencer marketing universe. But I think we've got to be careful that, again, that's not the be all and end all. As part of an integrated campaign that has different talent for different aspects of the campaign, then absolutely great. But again, it comes back to quality. If there's a way of making sure that the 10,000 micro influencers that are utilized for a campaign are all really great quality and are brand safe and are compliant and all of those things, then great.
Are you seeing that influencer marketing is becoming part of the conversation with agencies, say, from the very beginning now? Because from the conversations that I've been having, it used to be that you'd have the influencer marketing team at the agency, but now they're retitling themselves as head of influence, and the influencer part becomes part of the conversation from the start. And is that a good thing? And do you think that we are just at the beginning, but to date, it sort of has been a bit of a tack on to a lot of campaigns. So they don't actually invest a huge amount of budget. And then people have misconceptions about what influencer marketing can achieve for them.
Yeah, I think it still is a bit of a tack on in a lot of cases. And where this can go wrong, I think, is where influencer marketing is a box to tick in a media schedule. Stick X amount percent of budget into influencer and just get it spent. And that's where I think the influencer marketplaces get picked up for the wrong reasons, because it's an easy way to just shed the budget that way and not apply the guardrails to the quality of the talent, the interaction, the relationship with the brand, the exclusivity, all of those kind of things that make a partnership credible. But more and more, the influencer conversation or the digital first talent conversation comes further down the pipe in the whole planning process that allows the talent to have a greater impact on the creative that pops out of the end, which I think is the place that we all should be aiming at. These guys are not production companies, advertising agencies, etc. But the kind of content that they create and the way that they communicate to their audience is a unique part of that whole communication process for the brand. They shouldn't try and water it down into something else. But as part of their campaign, the talent has a really valid input into the campaign as a whole, then you're going to see some really interesting work, I think. And what's more, it'll be hugely more credible and real because they will have been a part of it rather than just being at the end of an app receiving, you know, a written brief on something and producing content to those ends.
Are your favourite campaigns to work on when a brand comes to Gleam direct with the brief and then there are three people in the chain? And what's the balance of getting a brief from a smaller agency to a bigger influencer agency? How does it work on balance and what do you prefer?
Oh, you know, I don't think I could say that we prefer a direct client relationship, an agency relationship, you know, two people in the chain, 10 people, 100 people in the chain.
What is the split, though?
In terms of the
yeah, brands the coming to you or agencies coming to you. And then is it mainly briefs because you are so well known in the space that you get a lot of briefs that come through, or do you go out and pitch for them as well?
Both.
Yeah.
All the time. I mean, the space is highly competitive now. Because of the brand that we have, really, there's not many campaigns that we don't see. We've got a fairly large brand partnerships team based at Gleam and also in the offices in Sydney and Los Angeles. And we pretty much see all the briefs that are out there. And it's a case now of just honing the process and also finding the really great partnerships that are out there and making the most of them as well, both for the client and the talent, because that's where we're going to see the success. I always tell the talent when working with a brand that the first deal is great, but if you value the relationship with that client, actually it's the 16th deal that we do with them that we're aiming at, and working with them in 2 years' time rather than working with them next month, because I think that's where we'll see the really quality work come out.
And actually, in terms of the sort of role of talent management, I think that we interviewed you back in issue 10 of Blogosphere, and it was about, it's not the next 12 months, it's 5 years, and it's future-proofing your career. And would you say that that's a big role of talent management? And at the beginning, it was helping broker those deals, commercialize it, but now that that's a bit more widely known how to do that, that it is about that guidance as well. And then also on the back of that, social media has exploded. So many influencers, creators are subjected to trolling online. How big is mental health as part of the equation with your talent?
We see our role very much as guiding and protecting the careers of the talent on our roster. It's expanded somewhat recently in that we're interested in brokering great relationships between brands and talent for the greater good of the whole industry, in terms of it being a good quality space for both advertisers and talent alike. But the other roles that we play are for the talent that are on our roster. Brand deals are an important part of it, yes, but it's about carving a career for our talent that will last them a lifetime. These people, all the talent that we represent, aren't doing it as a hobby. It's their job, and it's a job they're hugely passionate about, and they want to be doing it in 30 years' time. So we're very careful about making sure that their rights are protected, the stuff that they do is of quality. The partners that we find for them to create content, product, anything that the talent will create, publishing, are good and help them be the best that they can be. Part of that is the pastoral care that we give talent that are embarking on a career that quite realistically can see you going from obscurity to being scrutinized in the national press in a period of 6 months or so. And we've built up over, you know, our 10-year history of doing this pretty much since it ever existed, a network of people and professionals and experts that can help guide talent through this process, but with the expert viewpoint of coming at it from a digital first talent perspective rather than a traditional talent manager learning about how things work on the other side of things. We did the very first deal between a talent and an MCN, for example, and our COO at Gleam, Phil Hughes, was the independent lawyer that I consulted with on the very first MCN deals in 2010 and worked with him ever since. He did those very first deals, but now he's our COO and he recruited our business affairs and legal department and imparted all of that knowledge to them. And we'll learn new things all the time. And this is the other thing, is that there aren't any out and out experts in this space. It changes so fast. It's a different industry almost every 6 months. It's about being open-minded, nimble enough to be able to learn fast, find the best route and move forward. But experience certainly counts for some of that as well.
Is that what keeps it exciting for you?
Totally.
Going back, you said earlier that you saw that the industry, there was only one way that it was going. Did you anticipate just how big it was going to get? And what was that sort of ride like in 2013, 14, when it just exploded and, you know, you were the only ones in the market?
Yeah, it's exciting. It still is exciting.
What's been your favourite year of Gleam?
Oh, blimey. So there was a time when everything was hugely positive and exciting. The space is a lot more challenging now only because the opportunities are that much bigger. And when money flows into a space, it becomes more complicated because there are more people interested. And some of those people, it's a positive impact and some it's a negative impact. It's much more complex now and it's a hugely complex space. And that's a big challenge for the industry as a whole.
Yeah.
The advertising guidelines are just one part of the complexion that has arrived. But there was a time in, I don't know, 2014 to 16.
I was going to say 2014. That was a big year.
When the penny was dropping for the world about how exciting this was going to
be. And you already had 4 years before that, just building up. And
yeah.
In terms of your friendship groups and contemporaries, when you said what you were doing, did you have to do that for them? Like, oh, you know, what's this? What are you doing?
Yeah. There was a lot of laughter. There was a lot of derision because it sounded ridiculous. In 2011, when I said, oh, I manage YouTube talent at the time, like, what? And you think about 2014 as being an exciting year because 2014 is, we published Alfie's pointless book and
yep.
Didn't know if anybody would turn up to
and
his book signing.
11,000 people.
Yeah.
Shutting and then, down
yeah,
Piccadilly.
And Zoe published Girl Online.
78,000 copies in its first week.
Correct. Yeah. And it became the fastest selling debut novel from any author in history.
Mm-hmm. More than J.K. Rowling.
For her first novel, correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this was like,
this
wow.
is probably a bit of a different interview for you.
Yeah, it is. No, it's fantastic. But kind of Zoe landing on the front cover of the Daily Telegraph that morning when that book first came out and breaking those kind of records suddenly put it on the radar of the world at large. And whilst that is massively exciting and we were all so proud of her and so proud of, you know, everything that was happening at that point, that brought with it a load of scrutiny and negativity also, because that's just generally what happens when things become part of the national consciousness, the global consciousness, you know, you invite negativity also.
But do you feel that the narrative in the mainstream press has changed, or is it still that, I feel that it's still the same story, you know, years later, you know, James Charles going to Birmingham and shutting it down and the headline, James who? It's like, obviously people know him because you've shut down Birmingham.
Yeah. And it's taken longer to change than I thought, actually. But
do you think it will change?
Yeah, for sure. Because there's a generation of journalists coming up, and also the generation journalists that will have witnessed the start of this entire media category, that will treat it in the same way that they would think about, you know, other forms of entertainment and other forms of talent on other media platforms. But for the time being, they're still kind of like the most famous person you'd never heard of and so on and so forth. Mm. But I think it will be more valid. It will be more kind of like, I don't know, respected in the future, as long as we preserve the true meaning of talent, and that quality versus quantity.
I feel that there also just needs to be a bit more research before publishing articles or doing documentaries, which leads me on to Panorama and that half an hour window where it did feel that, like, oh, well, this will get lots of views. What are your views on that documentary?
So everybody,
there's
so much to learn about the space. If you are someone that comes into, like, is passed a piece of paper and said, right, this is, we're doing a story on this, get under the skin of it, research it. It's such a vast, complex space that you can really only scratch the surface in a half an hour. I could sit here and talk to you all day and all night. I love talking about the subject, and you obviously know what you're talking about as well. So we could talk for ages, but you still wouldn't be able to cover all of the subtleties of the way that the space works, the relationships, the audience, the platforms, the algorithms, the compliance now, the law, the this, that, and the other.
But do you feel that journalists actually even really want to find that out, or are just more interested in doing a hatchet job?
No. I think they really do. And we're coming across more and more journalists that have a genuine interest in how exciting this space will be in the future, and how also their jobs will integrate more and more with the platforms that we're talking about. So, you know, even the likes of the Financial Times or BBC Panorama are looking to reach new audiences on social media platforms with their entirely valid content. You know, they've got something to bring here. Remember, what we're talking about is quality. I think that the influx of journalists becoming influencers is a good thing. I think that the more qualified experts we have in the space creating content on social media, the better, because they have a voice and they have a very valid opinion and they go about it in a really high quality way. Then we need more of that on the platform.
In terms of the talent that you have represented, you've had the originals from the, you know, 2010, 2011, when it all exploded in 2014. A few of them have gone and bought management in-house or have developed new businesses, many of which you're involved with as well. Is that right? I see you sometimes. You know, you've got a music production company with Marcus Butler.
Music management.
Are you involved in A to Z music management?
No, sadly not.
No.
Sadly not.
I thought you were in a picture on an Instagram story as part of the team.
Well, I'm on Zoe's team.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But Gleam feed into Zoe's entire career as her management company. But she also has A to Z, which is a hub of creatives.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we're
Does
all
it make
in the
you
same
feel a
space.
Bit like a proud father?
Yeah, very much. No, very much so. And, you know, Joe turning up on Strictly Come Dancing this season, I think it's all amazing. And I think what gives me the greatest amount of satisfaction is seeing the evolution of talent in this space. And the likes of Joan, Casper and Alfie and Zoe and Sam and Nick and Louise Pentland all maturing into these accomplished, not only brilliant creators of content, but entrepreneurs and business people and experts in this space. And it's hugely satisfying. And to play a part in that is an honour.
How important do you think that Joe on Strictly was? Because it felt like it was the first time that mainstream press, you know, the mainstream everything, had taken on board a creator and accepted him. And, you know, now he's doing presenting jobs. And, you know, before it's anyone goes anywhere and they're trying to dig up a tweet from, you know, 5 years ago and get them chucked off. But
yeah.
Although at the beginning,
which still happens
it was
as well.
I mean, it did help. He could dance very well. That was great.
Yeah, he smashed it, didn't he? It was brilliant. Who knew?
Do you think we'll be seeing more talent in different mediums? So on television and...
Yeah. I think an interesting learning that we've all made over the last couple of years is that if you try and replicate social media on television and it doesn't work, and this is my viewpoint, you know, people watching television want to sit back and relax and be entertained by the television. When you go on telly and you ask them to get involved in your social media, two-way conversation and feedback and all that kind of stuff, or you make a show specifically about an element of social media, it doesn't work quite so much. But what we saw with Joe on Strictly was that Joe is a talented young guy. He's funny, engaging. He's a nice guy. He's a lovely guy. He's a relatable guy. He scrubs up well when you put him in some sequins, all of that kind of stuff. So he made a really good Strictly Come Dancing contestant. And he went on a journey because he couldn't dance before and he got taught to dance. And he obviously had a connection with his partner, etc. That all makes great television. And that's why that was so successful, I think. It just so happens that he had millions of followers on social media as well that also enjoyed his journey on Strictly. And everybody joined in and shared the experience. And this is something that we've been talking to the BBC about for years. Like, we think it is a, and it's the same with publishing. You know, back in 2012, knocking on publishers' doors saying, these guys could be great authors as well. They essentially, they have stories to tell or they're creative people. And this is a new platform for them to be creative on. Put them on your platform, add your expertise to that platform, and we'll get something really interesting out of the end. So take Joe, but add all the amazing production and heritage of Strictly Come Dancing and put Joe in it as well. But Joe's not trying to make an Instagram show on the dance floor. He's making Strictly Come Dancing with the BBC. And it looked great and it did exactly what it's supposed to do. I think we'll see more of that. So you'll see the true talent come out again and the people that can transition between platforms and make a good go of being on television and present. But it doesn't mean that they've stopped being an Instagrammer or a YouTuber at that point. They're just, the barriers between the platforms are just coming down. And what we're seeing is audience caring less about the piece of technology or the brand of the network that they're viewing the talent on and more about the content that they're getting and the talent that they're engaging with.
I think that we will also see more of that as the generation that do truly understand it get older and put in positions of more seniority within firms. Because I think that that's been a big problem, that across the board, it's like they'll pick the young person in the business because they must understand social media, but they don't really have any weight to sign things off. But I think that's quite an exciting future of that.
And we'll have more and more case studies that show without doubt that it's incredibly powerful and effective, as long as we have the right expertise around the table to make sure that campaigns are executed safely, professionally, compliantly, to be able to produce those results that are valid and robust.
Do you think that there is a need for an industry standards board? And would that be something that you would be happy to be a part of?
Yes, I think we need more clarity and we welcome more clarity. And if we can help in any way, then absolutely. We consulted with the ASA in the past about the, you know, original sets of guidelines and all of that kind of stuff. And they've evolved again and again. And that's a good thing, I think. I think there's still need for more clarity because professionals in this space only want to create good compliant content. No one's looking to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. And everybody wants quality as well because they see themselves as being producers of quality. And it means that the people that are buying, the platforms that are publishing, will be more informed about what good looks like. And that's a space we all ought to charge towards.
In terms of an industry board, but then also education in terms of the industry side when it comes to events, do you think there is anything in the market? Obviously, we've got VidCon. We had VidCon London. I did hear that a few people had gone to presentations at VidCon and they were shown presentations that were 5 years old and that, you know, things haven't developed. So do you think that there is space in the market for some more industry events? And is there a way to marry the two and have the consumer facing and the industry?
Yeah, potentially. I think VidCon's a very good and valid brand and it's been around since the very beginning. It was in London, of course, for the first time this year. I was on holiday, so I missed it, unfortunately. But
so
heard. Did you miss it as well?
Yeah.
I was sad to miss it because it looked like it was really great. I haven't heard the stories of the out-of-date presentations, etc. But yes, you know, everything is moving very fast. I think the more knowledge you bring to the marketplace in a way that relates to everybody, if you're an industry enthusiast and have been since the year dot, or you're brand new to it, but you're really enthusiastic about learning, then it should cater for both those types of people. And I think maybe kind of some sort of standardization in terms of like what quality looks like would be a great thing.
I think that the same thing should be said, you know, many influencers told, don't start this to make money. Start it because it's your passion and you're very interested in it and you have something to share. Mm. And in the same way, when you're speaking to someone that wants to set up an influencer agency because they think that there's loads of money, don't do it because of that. Do it because you've got something, you know, that you love the creative that's being done on social media and you feel like you could collaborate with a brand and make that better.
Yeah.
Just don't try and milk this industry cow, which is just what I feel that is happening at the moment.
Yes, I agree with you. The unique thing about talent that are at the very top of their game is that they have got into it for very pure motivations because there wasn't any money to be made at the time. And in a way, if I think about my journey, I started Gleam because I wanted more time with my family, actually. And I wanted to work on something that I was interested in. It was at the point that I gave up on, like, oh, I've just got to earn X amount of dollars, that it took flight and the treadmill just got faster and faster and kind of off we went. But passion should lie at the very heart of anybody's motivation to start creating content on a social media platform. But we are in an age whereby the primary motivation might be to earn money. But I think the audiences are super savvy and they will work that out. That's why transparency and honesty have got to be at the heart of all content creators, because audiences are so smart now and they always have been as well in this space. So again, I'm hoping the quality will out, basically.
What would you like your personal legacy to be?
Whoa.
God. We can come back to that one.
Yeah,
but first of all, the predictions. What are your predictions for the space over the next year and then your legacy? And then we'll wrap up.
Okay. So I think that we will see more of a focus on quality talent. I'll say this again. This is not about micro, macro, mid-tier talent, size of audiences, et cetera, et cetera. It's just about really great content creators, and they're out there all over the place. And that's what one of the most exciting things about working at Gleam is, finding these people, you know, finding a Mrs. Hinch.
Yeah, I was going to say Mrs. Hinch. That was crazy.
Yeah, unbelievable. But she is absolutely obsessed with creating
cleaning.
The content that she creates based on her big passion, which is cleaning. And her
she got me cleaning.
Yeah. She's amazing. And it's real.
I'm
it's
a
all,
Flora fan. It's her, some pine.
Absolutely. It's totally real. And that's why it works so well, you know. So I think we'll see a greater concentration on that. I think we'll see much more integrated activity from a commercial perspective. We'll see much more integrated activity, i.e. we're just about to do a campaign with one of our talent that is, it's a TV commercial in the traditional kind of way, as you might think it might be, but it also involves social media platforms. There's also usage to use the content on the other platforms as well. There's also paid media, there's organic media. And bringing all of that together, I think will produce some of the most exciting commercial work that we'll see over the next couple of years. I think on the creative side of things, I'm really looking forward to seeing what new ideas and IP, the talent that are in the space now, can produce when you team them up with expert partners. So think about, for example, I don't know, someone like Marcus Butler writing scripts for dramas, but put him in a room with his unique perspective on things with a room full of Hollywood writers and producers, and you get interesting stuff. Jim Chapman has a hilarious voice, and when that's transposed into scripts and writing, something interesting happens. But we're going to see the really exciting stuff when we start collaborating with people that are expert on their platform to create a different genre of content, but with a really authentic voice for a new generation of audience that needs to be entertained in a particular way. And that's all ahead of us. So yeah, those are the things that I'm super excited about at the moment. Same goes for product innovation. It's all there and coming together slowly. It's clunky, and it can be really clunky sometimes. Once we establish, and we've got some great partnerships, Real Techniques is a really good example of that. Once we establish these great partners, we can make world-beating content and product.
I remember my old boss used to say to me, a clunky but true sentence is better than a cliche. So that leads in yeah. quite well.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
So finally, your legacy. The godfather of social media. I've been watching too much Narcos.
God, I don't know. I hope that people think about Gleam in the future as having established in the mainstream, given a credible voice to a talent that was searching for a way through at the time that we founded. So, you know, your OG talent beginning to start to create exciting content and beginning to build audiences. I'd like to think that we arrived at the right time to be able to guide them through to the amazing achievements that they have now and have expedited that somewhat. And it may have been a little bit more haphazard. There may have been a few more hurdles to get over if we hadn't have been there. So I'd like to think about Gleam and Gleam to continue doing that in the future. So being the mark of quality when it comes to the future innovation that happens in this space.
And you?
That was quite a long answer, wasn't it?
I suppose it goes all the way back to when you were at school and I suppose maybe proving that you can make a career out of creativity and that spending time with your family.
Yeah. My number one, if I think about what I want and my career and what happened back in 2010 and with my health, all that kind of thing that's taught me is that my number one thing is I hope that my kids think about me as a good dad. And for me, that means being true to yourself and your family and the people you care about, and the relationships you have all the way through, and not to be influenced by other people or outside influences that might lead you astray. I was asked to give a quote for some book or other recently that was about what's the one thing, if you had to give a golden nugget as to how you to be a successful businessman or whatever. And I think that around the theme that business is about people, and I always think about putting people first. Gleam could not have achieved the success it's achieved if it wasn't for the people, the team that I have around me, I've always had. And that includes the talent, by the way, and the combination of the two. But also to start with 100% trust and trust people to a point that they give you a reason not to trust them. And you'll always get further faster because you will have support.
A big thanks to Dom for coming on the show.
You've been listening to Blogosphere Serious Influence with me, Alice Audley. Join us next week for a brand new episode. Until then, be sure to check out blogosphere.com for influencer industry updates. And why not treat yourself to a magazine subscription whilst you're there?